Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, August 6, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Time. And remember that our shows are available 24-7 on drsaputo.com and prn.fm.
Today you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we got a fantastic show for you today. Well, we're at the Lair of the Bear, which is University of California's family camp in Pinecrest, California, taking a great vacation. And we're going to be starting out with psychological abuse. Is that risky for your kids?
Like, duh.
Duh.
Maybe.
Artificial flavor linked to Alzheimer's disease. Oh, my gosh.
And how about exercising when you're in congestive heart failure? Think that'll help you?
And how does lack of sleep affect vaccine potency?
And how about cataract surgery? Is that going to be a good thing for older people to prevent hip fractures?
And if you'd like to join in our conversation and have questions about our topics or health, give us a call on Mondays from 10 to 11 a.m. Pacific Time or 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time on prn.fm at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
Hasn't this been a fun week? Chance to get together with family, be up in the woods and the mountains and sleep in these tents and eat together at these nice family gatherings.
Boy, I'll say, and to smell the pine trees. And last night I was looking through the trees. It's nice to get away and relax, especially after last weekend in Las Vegas. It was pretty lively.
Well, I'm ready for my own bed tonight. How about you?
Well, you know, stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
You want to bet on that one?
Well, here's a study that begs to differ from Sting. Talk about child abuse. Some of these child abuse experts say just the opposite. So how do the experts define psychological abuse?
Well, there are things like belittling people and denigrating them and terrorizing them. You can exploit them. There's all kinds of ways to be distant and not present. It can be very controlling. And even, I mean, a lot of families have problems with sexual abuse and with all kinds of physical abuse. And it has an impact. And I have to say, Vicki, in my practice, I see this all the time.
Well, I think that people need to have some type of child-rearing education when they're in school instead of waiting until they have kids. Because a lot of people tend to raise their kids the way their parents did, and some of their parents didn't do a great job.
No, and when you look at the fact that probably every family is dysfunctional in some way, it's going to have some kind of scar on people later in life. And it's not unusual for me to see people in their 50s or 60s or even 80s who have not resolved those issues because at the time that they happened, they didn't have the tools that they needed to resolve them because they're just kids. And later in life, as they develop those tools, they really use them to solve the problems that they repressed when they were kids.
When you talk about dysfunctional families, I think most families are dysfunctional or else they're dysfunctional but not dysfunctional.
Well, have you ever seen a family some kind of that I haven't. And it doesn't mean that there aren't some really good parents and really good experiences, because there obviously are. But the way we raise our kids, the mother's working, the father's work, is like a latchkey family. And what happens is they're raised by a nanny or they're on their own. And a lot of things happen. They just don't get the boundaries and guidelines. And the people that they respect, their role models, are not really the ones you'd like them to be. There's somebody on TV who's a gangster, maybe.
You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Spitty with Nurse Vicki. We had a little hiccup there, and we're back. We're talking about all the things that happen in dysfunctional families that have to do with how we treat our kids emotionally, physically, and even sexually.
Yes, yeah, so thank you for staying with us. And where we left off was, I think I was talking about how many times parents are so busy with their work schedules and all the things that they have to do that they get short with their children. and they might discipline them in ways that they wouldn't if they weren't in such a hurry, because they get abrupt with them.
Well, our values are the problem. I mean, what's really the first thing? Is it your family? Is it your career? What is it? And really, we have too many situations where kids are not getting the kind of boundaries, nor are they getting the love and affection and direction that they need to be able to be functional people who are happy.
Well, some children even end up in gangs, I think, because that serves as a type of a family for them.
Absolutely. You go to the hard parts of San Francisco or Oakland or Richmond, not where we live, and your chances of going to San Quentin are fantastically high. I have no doubt in my mind that if I grew up in that area, there'd be a good chance I would be living in San Quentin now.
I think you would, too.
Well, thank you. Well, let's see. I have some plans now. How's it going to get me there?
Well, you know, too, a lot of these kids that are bullies, they learn it from their families, or they have some reason why they need to bully other people. And sometimes people end up being victims, and then when they grow up and they're adults, they still find themselves in situations where they're a victim.
Well, I think people will do what they have to. You get pushed far enough, you'll do what you have to survive. And if you've got a wonderful family that's loving, that's taking care of you, that provides your needs in every way, you know, as a whole human being, you're going to do just fine. But if you have a family that's growing up in the ghetto, and mom's a prostitute and dad's on drugs, and your kids are out there in gangs and you're part of a gang, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, all this kind of abuse is something that is more than just a personal thing. This is a community thing. This is a thing that's a national issue for us.
You know, another place where you see it is in sports. You know how sometimes you see the kids and they're out playing their soccer games or whatever, and the parents, especially many times it's the dads, they get out there and they're arguing with the coach and with each other.
Oh, it's like crazy.
But you had some experiences with some of the tennis players, because you played a lot of competitive tennis, and some of them, their parents were pretty strict with them about whether they won or not.
Well, it wasn't a healthy thing. I mean, the problem was it was about winning and losing. It wasn't about enjoying the game. It wasn't about having testing your skills to see where your boundaries were. And so people would do anything to win. I know I had one friend, stellar tennis player, just one of the best. But if he went home and he'd lost a match, he'd get beaten up by his family. So he would do anything to not have that happen. So if a ball was even a foot in, he might call it out if it was a big point. And everybody looking at him, what are you doing? And it was really tough. So
another situation I was thinking of, too, with some of these family conflicts that can cause an emotional abuse is in divorce, because many times people that go through divorces use their kids to get at each other.
Well, there are a lot of dysfunctional ways to try and solve our personal problems. But we've got to go back to, what are we trying to do? Is our goal to serve ourselves in a competitive adversarial way, which is the way our culture is built together today? I mean, what we have is to win at all costs, to make money in any way that we can, not worry so much about the service that we provide. We're not building community, really. We're building independence. And that needs to shift if we're going to try and build community. So our values have to change.
Well, the thing that I think is that people need to learn coping skills. And if their parents are fighting all the time, I think it's important when the parents make up that the children witness how they make up, so that they can learn how to make up, because everybody is going to have problems. However, anything can be overdone. I remember somebody telling me how she hated it. Their parents were fighting all the time, fighting, fighting, fighting. And then she says, then they'd kiss and make up, and then they'd be all lovey-dovey, and she said she just hated that.
Well, look at the other families where there's physical abuse, you know, where women in particular, but men sometimes too, are beaten by their spouse. And they keep going back in it, and there are times when there are actually murders that are the result of that.
And they're teaching their children how to cope by hitting their spouses and doing all that sort of stuff later. But you know what I wanted to get to is I wanted to talk about post-traumatic stress.
That's what this is.
With healing circles, because you see this all the time in your practice when you do healing circles with people. So maybe you can talk about how this psychological abuse affects people's health.
Oh, it's tremendous. I mean, people will come to me with headaches or back pain or ulcers or irritable bowel syndrome, all kinds of things, and you've got to go back and find the root cause. And so much of the time, it goes back to what happened when you were a young person and you had problems that you couldn't cope with, and you didn't know how to deal with. And that comes out as a physical complaint. So that physical disease becomes the body's way of expressing psycho-spiritual dysfunction. That's an important enough sentence. I want to repeat it again. Physical disease is the somatic or body's expression of psycho-spiritual dysfunction. And the challenge of the person managing the health of a person like that is to understand that and work towards that goal. So you asked me about healing circles. Well, we invented those back in about 1995. And basically, it was a way of trying to find out how to work together integratively amongst different disciplines on the same patients. So we would bring together a naturopath and a chiropractor and a doctor as an internist or pediatrician.
And a psychiatrist or a psychologist.
Sure. Anybody who might have some value and that person, that patient, would like to have on their circle. Then we spend 2 hours with them, listening and caring as the primary things. And the way we get our information about them is that they write an autobiography of their physical, emotional, and spiritual health. And then we all read it, then we convene for 2 hours, and we see where things go. And very often what happens is people will be going downhill on the course that they're on, which is going to lead to bigger disasters than they already have. And then they may see the light or be inspired, and they may take a left turn because they go, oh, I see that. That's not working. I need to try something different. Then they can work on that. And these circles are always free. They're at no charge. And the reason for that is because it's a gift. And the patient needs to understand that what we're interested in as a group is supporting them, not so much worrying about how much money we're going to make or what kind of acknowledgement we're going to get.
Well, I think it really warms people's heart to think that people care enough about them to spend this time and energy to help to get at the root of what their problem is.
Well, it is. We've done hundreds of them, and I can't remember but one or two where people didn't have some kind of experience from that was really promising. So when we look at this whole topic of abuse, particularly emotional abuse, and most of it verbal, we've got a huge problem that's not being addressed because our family life is the way it is because parents don't know better, and they've got their own problems, and we're not getting the education that we need in the schools or in other places where that needs to happen. So I think that that's something we really need to pay attention to. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. If you have a question about your health, give us a call. And we'll be back in after Vicki's new tip on Gonna Be a Bear.
You know, since we're here having fun at the Lair of the Bear at UC's family camp in Pinecrest, California, I've decided that I want to be a bear.
Okay.
Yes, in this life, I'm a woman. In my next life, I'd like to come back as a bear. When you're a bear, you get to hibernate. You do nothing but sleep for 6 months. I can deal with that. And before you hibernate, you're supposed to eat yourself stupid. I can deal with that, too. Well, did you know that when you're a girl bear, you birth your children who are the size of walnuts while you're sleeping? And you wake up to partially grown, cute, cuddly cubs. Now, I could definitely deal with that. And if you're a mama bear, everyone knows you mean business. I mean, you swat anyone who bothers your cubs. Your cubs get out of line, you swat them, too. Talk about abuse. I could deal with that. And if you're a bear, your mate expects you to wake up growling. He expects that you'll have hairy legs and excess body fat. Yep, going to be a bear.
Well, Vicki, I like you the way you are. This bear stuff, I mean, you can take it just about so far, but you're right, humor, laughter is the best medicine. That's a really cool story.
You know, many of us know to be aware of artificial ingredients. But what about artificial butter? You know, sometimes we're caught off guard. Who would think that it could be added to Chardonnay for a buttery flavor?
Not the craziest thing.
Is it on the label? And then there's microwave popcorn. You know, microwave isn't a smart idea anyway. I mean, who knows what they can do to the, what that can do to the brain. But who would think that artificial butter in microwave popcorn could be linked to Alzheimer's disease?
You know, this is the tip of the iceberg, Vicki. There are so many things that we do to our foods that it's just insane.
Well, plus the popcorn's in aluminum, and that's also associated with Alzheimer's disease.
True enough. Yeah, well, there are lots of ways to go wrong. You know, Mother Nature went through a lot of trouble to make food exactly like it is. And if we'd learned from that wisdom, because I think we've been living off food for a few hundred thousand years now, I think she's got it right. And then we get in there, and we want to make it store better and look better and taste a little bit different.
And be cheaper.
And be less expensive. And, of course, what happens is we wind up with crap. It's got artificial additives and preservatives. It's got pesticides. It's got all kinds of things in it that make it not so attractive for the human body.
You know, even if you see the label that says natural flavors.
No chance.
That can mean that it has MSG in it, monosodium glutamate.
It can mean a lot of things because they don't, I mean, the FDA simply doesn't regulate those things as much as they could. And some of it's because they don't have the staff to do it, but some of it, I'm afraid, is for reasons that they're not so honorable.
Well, you know, too, they put this artificial butter in candy and even in margarine and snacks and bakery food and pet food and all that kind of thing, thinking that they're making it taste better.
Well,
but, you know, nothing added to food is guaranteed to be safe. You know what else I was wondering about? When you get Chardonnay, because I like to drink a glass of Chardonnay.
I know you do.
But when you drink Chardonnay, a lot of them say that they've got citrus and apple or peach or melon flavors.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of curious about that. I want to talk to somebody that makes wine. That's sort of
somebody that makes wine that will tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Because all these things, see, the problem is you put something that's never been in a human body before because it's not part of our biochemistry. You're going to change the complex biochemical system we have. There are tens of thousands of reactions that occur every microsecond in the body. And if you put something in there that's not well studied, because you can't really study how some particular thing like diacetyl, which is the chemical we're talking about that gives you the buttery flavor, you don't know what that's going to do in the whole metabolic chart inside of a cell.
Well, doesn't it give long-term neurological toxicity?
Well, it can. I mean, when you just look at this one particular compound, we know that it does something to increase the level of the beta amyloid clumping that we see when we look at the pathology of somebody who has Alzheimer's disease. But it also has toxic effects on nerve cells that are growing in tissue culture. So we know that that it isn't good for us. We know it gets through the blood-brain barrier, so it can get to the brain. And it's also a protective, there's also a protective protein that's called glyoxylase 1 that is supposed to safeguard nerve cells that diacetyl destroys. So here's another example of something that's just amazing that we have the audacity to use with such limited amount of restraint.
Well, and the bad news, too, is that this diacetyl also forms naturally in fermented drinks like beer and Chardonnay.
Right, which, by the way, is also not a natural thing to do, although some of the things that we do are a lot less worse than others. But you look at the lists of ingredients that we have in foods. I mean, if you buy something that's in a cellophane package, okay, that's a food product, and you read all the things that are on that label, if you don't understand what they are, you first of all shouldn't put them in your body because there are lots of restraints that should be placed on those that the FDA never does that are absolutely necessary to have restraint on because what we're doing is we're living in a sea of pollution now. We've got 100,000 new chemicals that have never been in a human body, and that's just in the last 75 years.
Well, it's pretty crazy to put additives in food that haven't even been tested.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, look how are you disturbing the biochemistry of a cell. And if you do that, you don't know what the end result is going to be, but you can bet it's not going to be good because if you're waiting for evolution to do this, I mean, that takes tens of thousands of years sometimes to make a change. And when you barrage the body with chemicals that have never been there before, you're doing a gigantic experiment on humanity that's going to give you the result that you can expect. I mean, it's going to be a disaster.
Did you also say that the diacetyl that's formed so can cause respiratory problems?
No, the people that work with it are the ones that are getting all kinds of respiratory problems. So those people that are working in plants, okay, that make the microwave popcorn and some of the food flavoring factories are having lots of health issues. And it shouldn't come as a big surprise. if you want to stay healthy, stay using food that looks like food. If it looks like a watermelon or a zucchini or parsley, eat it. That's going to be good for you. And if it comes in some package or in a pill and it doesn't grow naturally in nature, you better think twice.
Well, I guess one of the things is that people started wanting to preserve food so that it could last longer for the masses.
Sure. When we moved from the country to the city, we had a big demand for enough food for sometimes hundreds of thousands and today millions of people. And that presents a big problem. And we just went along with the idea that that was okay because it's what everybody does. But we really should be taking care to grow our own gardens when we can. And there are a lot of places you can grow gardens. Even if you live in a city, you can have a porch where you can bring in good soil and that's got the nutrients that you need to have in it that hasn't been toxified by something. And you can grow them organically. And you can make a lot of food that way that would make a big difference. Because a lot of the chronic diseases that we're seeing today are caused by what? Food that isn't really food at all, that has chemicals in it that are destroying our biochemistry and making us sick.
And it's not just in our food. It's in the things that we eat, not just the things that we eat, but it's the things that we put on our skin. It's the things we drink. It's the things that we breathe in our environment. I mean, take, for example, disposable baby diapers.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, don't eat
what's
those.
Wrong with using the old-fashioned regular diapers? Because people get lazy
something
and they want to throw
cotton.
Them away. Well, not only do they fill up the garbage dumps and they're not biodegradable, but they contain things like chlorine and dioxins that are carcinogenic. And there are such a thing as organic disposable diapers if people really need to use disposable diapers. And some of these baby wipes are, it's crazy. They contain terrible ingredients that are like poison, like the phthalates that can decrease the baby's sperm count when they get older and affect their reproduction. And they even contain things like antifreeze and the dioxins and triclosan. I hate triclosan. They put it in so many things. Triclosan is often used as an antibacterial, and it's a neurotoxin. It increases the risk of cancer. It's a hormone disruptor. It's forms chloroform when it's mixed with chlorine. All you need is 3 drops of it in the swimming pool. You know, I was just thinking when people go swimming in a pool and they've used these hand sanitizers or the soap that has triclosan in it and these antibacterial wipes, even sanitary napkins and tampons. They contain synthetic fibers and plastic and fragrances that are all loaded with toxins and the feminine hygiene sprays and the douches and the spermicides. Spermicides, if they don't work, you're going to end up having a deformed baby. And toilet paper can have formaldehyde and fragrances and fabric softener and mouthwash. If you read on a mouthwash bottle, it contains the same ingredients you use to clean your bathroom, and it's fatal if it's swallowed. And the same thing with fluoride in the toothpaste, because it says if you swallow more than a pea-sized amount, call poison control. And what child doesn't swallow some of it? Anyway, I could go on and on, but if you're interested in more of this, you can go to Vicky's Corner on drsaputo.com.
Yeah, it's really a fantastic section that will teach you about the sea of toxins. And we can go on with some of the other effects that it has, because it's just profound at what it does to our health. At any rate, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicky. The number, if you have a question about your health or want to join our conversation, is 888-874-4888. It's time for a Progressive Radio Network station break, and we'll be back with, can exercise actually help people with congestive heart failure? So stay tuned for more Prescriptions for Health Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicky. The number, if you have a question about your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888.
People with any kind of heart disease who find themselves depressed need to find ways to get over their depression, or it can affect their heart in a negative way, affecting their quality of life and their prognosis. So tell us about this study that they did at Duke on exercise and depression and congestive heart failure.
Well, it's really kind of interesting. You'd think that somebody who's in congestive heart failure needs rest. Now, if you're in pulmonary edema, meaning your lungs are filling up with water, you've got a real problem, okay, in needing to rest as much as you can. But once you stabilize and you're taking the drugs that I think are essential to take if you're in congestive heart failure, it's one of the times where if you didn't use a drug, you'd have a real problem trying to recover from some of the acute things that happens there.
Because a lot of people think when they have heart disease like this that they should rest.
Yeah, and in that setting, it's absolutely necessary. But there's a fellow from Duke, his name is James Blumenthal, he's a PhD, did a study on 2,300 patients with congestive heart failure. And what he did is he treated half of them with just 90 minutes a week of exercise in 30-minute batches. So three times a week, he'd put them through an exercise program that got their heart rate up, and it was good aerobic exercise. And what he found is that the heart muscle could adapt just like every other muscle in our body. You use it, it gets better. You don't use it, you lose it. And so what it showed was that there was improved oxygen consumption and there was better endurance at 3 months and 1 year after he started his study. And there are about 40,000, I mean, there are about 5 million people who have congestive heart failure, and about 40,000, I mean, about 40% of them are depressed and have a lot of problems with ongoing failure that limits their activity.
What do you think comes first, the depression or the heart disease?
Well, I mean, people can get depressed, no question, but if you get heart failure and you think you're going to die and you're going to die that way, I mean, that can certainly depress you. And nobody really knows. I think it works both ways. There are would-be people who are depressed to start with, and this would, of course, make them worse. And then getting congestive heart failure is going to depress people, too, so it's a mixed bag.
Well, the other thing is, too, is that we've talked in the past about depression. Many people that have had heart attacks are depressed.
For sure.
And it accounts for worse clinical outcomes for patients that have had heart attacks. And unstable angina and coronary bypass surgery and heart failure. And a lot of people with heart conditions are depressed. This is why it's important for people to know this so that you can try to help them and to support them and help them to get out of it.
Well, that's right. And the thing that we tend to do in mainstream medicine is that we tend to use antidepressants. We use the SSRI antidepressants, which, of course, is not such a good idea. And the same James Blumenthal from Duke has done studies on that showing that if you exercise people for an hour three times a week, it's as effective as Prozac or the other SSRI antidepressants. So why would you want to take a drug that could cause suicide, that can give you perhaps osteoporosis, and have a lot of other side effects like interfering with your sleep and giving you bad dreams, etc.?
I think you said an hour a week. It's a half an hour a day three times a week, so that's 90 minutes a week.
That was in the study that was on congestive heart failure. But the study that was done on Prozac,
That's okay.
Well, that's good enough if you want to get it right. That was different. That was just an hour three times a week, and it did exactly the same thing as the Prozac. And at 6 months, they were better off than the people that were on Prozac. There was less of a problem with depression. So the natural way to solve this makes the most sense, but the problem is how do you go about finding a cause? Who's going to take the time? And in a system like we have in healthcare today, where you get paid more for prescribing the antidepressants and where your training teaches you to do that, we're off on the wrong direction. So we need to change the way we think as doctors and as healthcare practitioners in every field, to be looking at what can the person who has the problem do themselves to solve it, with lifestyle first. If that doesn't work, non-invasive therapies. If that doesn't work, maybe supplements and herbs. And then if that doesn't work, think about a medicine that could have terrible effects on your body.
And the exercise needs to be a priority.
Absolutely.
So just like, you know, if a person's on a regimen for taking their medications, mm-hmm. the exercise is more important than the medication. So what I'm trying to say is that has to be a priority also.
Well,
and the other thing is that there have been other studies that have shown that talking to a friend can really help depression. So
sure.
If you want to exercise, how about doing it with a friend?
Yeah.
Or taking a walk with a friend and
sure.
walk and talk.
Well, yeah. See, some kind of way of getting at what happened. Was it that bullying that you had? You know, we started out this show talking about how dysfunctional abuse in families causes these kinds of problems. You're going to treat that with an antidepressant or with some kind of sleeping pill or some anti-anxiety pill because you're having panic attacks or you can't drive on the freeway or you've got some phobia. These are all things that need to be looked at and not suppressed with some drug that has side effects. If it was safe to take, it'd be another story. And if it solved the problem, it'd be another story. But when you have 400,000 deaths every year that come from medications, then we have to do something to avoid those if we possibly can. So lifestyle is your best medicine. And you can take responsibility by yourself by doing that. You know, eat right, sleep right, reduce your stress, and work it out the way that you have to.
And get off the couch.
Yeah, sure. The couch potatoes don't do so good. Right, our listeners here are on the couch. But get off, you guys.
You know, if you have any questions about your health or you want to join in our conversation, give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
All right. It's also, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's final 2020 tip.
I have some interesting definitions for you. Life insurance. That's a contract that keeps you poor all your life so that you can die rich.
Isn't that the truth?
A nurse. A person who wakes you up to give you sleeping pills.
That's the truth, too.
And marriage. It's an agreement in which a man loses his bachelor degree and a woman gains her master's.
Uh-oh.
Where's my whip?
Get out of here.
A father. A banker provided by nature.
That's true.
A criminal is a person no different from the rest, except that he or she got caught.
Right on.
The boss. Someone who's early when you're late and late when you're early.
Yes. Just true.
A politician, one who shakes your hand before elections and your confidence afterwards.
Indeed, especially these days.
And a doctor, a person who holds your ills by pills and kills you by bills and pills.
That's way too true, Vicki. I don't think that's the intent, but that all too often is what happens.
A classic is a book which people praise, but they don't read it.
Right. I got the book on my shelf, right?
Office, a place where you can relax after your strenuous home life.
Right.
A committee, individuals who can do nothing individually and sit to decide that nothing can be done together.
Life is really interesting.
And experience is the name that men give to their mistakes.
Men give to their mistakes. What's this sexist comment here?
I'm a bear.
You're a bear. Okay. Don't get rough now. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Sleep is so important, and lack of it can seriously affect our health by increasing our appetite, the incidence of diabetes, obesity, cancer, and suppress our immunity. And here's a study showing yet another reason to get enough sleep: if you get a vaccination, because it reduces the effectiveness of the vaccine, if there is an effect. Because,
well, that's true, too.
But it's because there's a poor antibody response to the vaccine without enough sleep. So tell us about the researchers from the University of Pittsburgh and what they found out about sleep and our immune system.
And then we'll come back and talk about this whole topic, too, because it's really interesting at how things have evolved to where they are. But anyway, in this study, they had 125 people who they gave three standard doses of hepatitis B vaccine. And then they gave the first and second dose a month apart. It was followed by a booster at 6 months. And then they measured antibody levels after each of these vaccines were given. And they also did sleep records, so they kept track of how long these people were getting sleep each night. And what they found was is that people who slept fewer than 6 hours on the average per night were far less likely to have an antibody response that was adequate to protect against the disease. In fact, they were 11.5 times less adequate. So it's incredible. We have to get our sleep, and if you don't get as much as 7 hours of sleep, that's what happens.
So how about talking just a little bit about what antibodies do? What does it mean to have an antibody response when you get a vaccination?
Well, there are different kinds of responses that you get from your immune system. One is to make antibodies, and the other is to make cells that will kill viruses and cancer cells for the most part. And so when your body makes antibodies, it will kill the microbe, usually a bacteria, better than a virus. And when it makes the cells that will do this, then it is very effective against viruses and against cancer. So if we don't have a response that's the right one, it may not do the job that you want it to do. And one of the problems with almost all immunizations against viral illnesses is that we make antibodies, we don't make cells so much that have the immune system working so well. So do the vaccines even work is a real question. And I think until we have studies that are comparative, that show one population getting the vaccine and the other population not getting the vaccine, and then looking to see what the side effects are of the vaccine itself, we're not going to know the answer. So I'm not against vaccines, but I'm against really pathetic science. And that's what this is about. The CDC should be abandoned. They should be hung by their toes. They're one of the most pathetic organizations that have come across my awareness in a lot of years. They have the potential to do a lot of good, but the conflicts of interest are terrible. When you look at Julie Gerberding, who was the head of the CDC, promoting the swine flu vaccine, which was a travesty in itself, where does she work today now that she's out of a job?
Merck.
And what does she make? Between two
vaccines.
And seven. Well, she does make vaccines. But in terms of money, if she makes the same amount other people from other companies that make vaccines do in her position, it's between $2 and $7 million a year plus stock options. So something's crooked here.
Well, you know, if you really want to hear all about this story, about the infection deception, look it up on drsaputo.com. Type in the search box, the infection deception.
All right.
But I think it's interesting, going back to this antibody response, the amount of sleep that you get, because there's a big difference just between 6 and 7 hours sleep.
Oh, yeah, and take it down to just 5 or 4 hours a night, and you'll lose, in one night, you will lose 30% of your natural killer cells. Those are those cells I was telling you about that are important for fighting the illness that you're trying to protect against.
If you want a reminder, just think about when you were in school and you were taking finals.
Indeed.
I don't think I ever took a final without a cold.
I know. I think all the finals were in December. It seemed like, because I was always sick then too, because I never got enough sleep. Everybody was getting colds or mono or things that were worse.
And also think about people that travel, that do international travel.
Oh, right.
Your circadian rhythms get all mixed up.
All right, so who should take a vaccine? Who should take an immunization? Somebody who really wants protection against an illness. So it would be somebody who maybe has an autoimmune disease, who has cancer, who has AIDS, who has some of the chronic infection. And, of course, what happens is they don't work in those settings because the immune system is fouled up in those people. So who are the people that get it? The ones that don't need it. The ones that are strong and healthy, don't have any problems. So why would you take it? So what's the point of the vaccine then? You know, it gets to be somewhat confusing, doesn't it?
I wanted to finish some more about the sleep, too.
Okay.
Because thinking about people that aren't getting enough sleep. For example, scientists have found that night shift workers are more susceptible to chronic inflammation and disease like the diabetes and obesity and cancer and high blood pressure and heart disease and strokes and osteoporosis. And then what about people that take melatonin to regulate their circadian rhythms, like when I was talking about when people do international travel? But some people take melatonin anyway. So what?
Well, if you want to do it for travel, you know, just for a day or two, it works and it's okay. I think the body can absorb that shock. And I say it that way because when you're giving tens of thousands times the dose that the body makes of this critically important hormone that regulates every hormone system in the body, you're playing with fire. Why would you want to take the risk of upsetting cell metabolism, every cell in the body that's regulated by that hormone?
For
it's
some
a silly
reason,
thing.
A lot of people think it's a natural thing and that it's better than taking a barbiturate.
Well, steroids are natural, too, by the body.
Yeah.
You want to load people up with prednisone? I think not. So what we do to people, we have to really think about, because we cavalierly look for what? The positive response that we're going to get from a certain thing that we're doing. It's like back in the 50s when steroids came out, cortisone came out, and they were using it on people who had rheumatoid arthritis. All the headlines said, we've cured rheumatoid arthritis. And, of course, 6 months later, yeah, you helped the rheumatoid arthritis a bit, but then you wound up with ulcers and psychosis and all kinds of problems.
Emerging.
I mean, it turned out to be a disaster. So The problem we have with the pharmaceutical approach to things today is that we rely too heavily on that as the primary way to do things, and then we only do limited research. When the pharmaceutical industry does the research it does, they're spending between $500 million and $1 billion, okay, on each drug that they can get patents on. And they don't begin to touch the complexity of what's happening at different parts of the human body, because there are effects that happen that affect things that you would never dream of. So when a drug gets on the market, within 2 years, 25% of these drugs either have a black box warning or they've been taken off the market, because we found out from the research that we did on the mass population that took the drug at what was going to happen.
So,
that's a disaster.
If you're taking a new drug and your doctor says, oh, let's try this, this is this brand new drug and it does wonders, really what you are is a guinea pig.
You are definitely a guinea pig, because
they can't do all
the research.
You're a rat.
We're a rat?
That's who they do the tests on, is on rats.
Well, this time you're a lab rat, yeah, sure. But I mean, that's the complexity of things, and it doesn't tell you that big pharma is just bad. It doesn't tell you that the way doctors practice medicine is just bad. But there are major limitations to that approach that should not be the first choice. Our first choice should be using what you can do yourself. Use your own lifestyle principles. And if you'll do that, the chances of you getting sick are not so good. Because each of the things that are involved in lifestyle, diet, exercise, stress reduction, sleep, weight, being exposed to toxic chemicals, and having meaningful purpose in life, each of those things, if they are not balanced properly, cause inflammation. And it's inflammation that causes all these illnesses that we experience to happen.
Another thing I wanted to just add to the list was sleep apnea, because for some reason that's seems to be more common lately.
Well, what's interesting about sleep apnea, though, Vicki, is that in this particular study they did, the lack of sleep was the problem. Poor sleep wasn't. Now, you know, just because I agree with you. I think that just because one study shows that the quality of sleep doesn't matter, you got to take a much more careful look at that, because how do you feel the next morning when you haven't slept well?
Yeah, well, just because they didn't do the study.
Well, they did some study on that, but that's what it showed.
That's weird.
Not every study comes out the same. That's why you have 30 studies out there, and maybe 15 of them say yes and 15 say no, and then you're sitting there going, well, what the hell does that mean? What am I supposed to do? How do I interpret this data?
Well, if you have sleep apnea, it's probably not a good idea to have a vaccine if you were thinking about it.
Well, maybe. I don't know the answer to that. I don't think vaccines in general have been proven, and that goes back to the original statement that I made. And that's why our grandkids have not had vaccines. I feel that strong about it, and the parents do, too. So I think we need to get back to good science. Again, I'm not opposed to immunizations. I'm opposed to bad medicine. And if we're giving immunizations to people and giving 60 to 80 of them by the time they're 18 years old, you've got to have a loose screw in your head. You're putting all these DNA fragments and other kinds of things like formaldehyde in people's bodies when you're doing these injections. What kind of effect do you think that's going to have over time? All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Spoody here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, here's a headline. Medicare patients 65 years old and older have a lower risk of hip fracture after cataract surgery.
So let's go get our cataracts fixed, huh?
So how are the eyes and the hip connected?
Well, everything's connected, right? And the eyes and the hips for sure, too. If you can't see where you're going, you're old, and you're not strong. Yeah, and you got a little osteoporosis. Don't fall.
I guess I just reduced my risk for hip fracture because I improved my vision with cataract surgery. This last month, I've had 2 cataract surgeries.
And how'd they work out?
Great. So, terrific.
So now you can see a fly at 50 yards. Huh?
That's it.
You're dangerous to be around. You can see everything I'm doing, too. That's
the better to see you with, my dear.
Yeah, indeed. Okay. Well, when you had your surgery, it was a 20-minute procedure, in and out, with a magic result. And what they did is they went in there, they actually fragmented, they shattered
Your
lens, sucked it out with a vacuum cleaner, little tiny one. They didn't use a Hoover. and they slipped in a new lens, and you came out 20 minutes. I guess you were in there about a half an hour all total, and we drove you home. I mean, talk about a magical surgery that does a good thing.
Well, I'm sure glad that I don't have to worry about falling now.
Well, you weren't. Actually, you were a little unstable, weren't you?
When?
When you were not able to see. And at night, how safe was it to drive?
Well, it wasn't very safe.
Could you see the road signs?
No. Well, I couldn't even see them in the daytime. Actually, they tell me I wouldn't pass DMV, so it was a good thing I had the surgery.
Boy, I'll say.
So now everybody else's health is better.
Yeah, well.
I'm not going to hit them.
Well, see, are you going to be the bear again?
Yeah.
I'm going to be a bear?
Bear!
Yeah, see, when I was about 35 and playing competitive tennis, I was watching a ball a little too close, and one went right in my eye. Lights out. No big problem for another 25 years, at which time a membrane was growing in the back of my eye, and my retina, and I couldn't see the E on the chart, which told me it was time I'm going to have to take the risk of peeling that thing off in a three-hour operation, which I did. And it turned out wonderfully, and I could again see I could see 20/20. And then as a complication of that surgery, I wound up with a cataract, so I know what you're talking about. And again, I couldn't see the E on the chart. So we went back, had the cataract fixed, and now I have 20/20 vision in that eye again. It's amazing at the technology that we have in medicine today. So,
well, the quality of a person's life is really important.
It's huge. It's knowing what to do when. So if you're talking about the way I talk and you talk about medicine sometimes, you'd think, well, we should get rid of it entirely and throw it out. But if we did, I wouldn't be able to walk because I had two knees done. I wouldn't be able, and a hip done to some extent. I wouldn't be able to see because of that. So, you know, I should be very grateful that we have this wonderful thing called mainstream medicine today. The accurate thing to do and the thing that serves you the best is when do you use it? When it comes to surgeries like this, I'm for it.
Well, they've also found that people that have the cataract surgery, it really saves a lot of money because it's preventing the hip fractures.
Well, yeah.
And I think the insurance companies are happy to pay it because it's a lot less money to pay for cataract surgery than it is to pay for a hip surgery.
Right. And it also, you know, it saves you a lot in the way of quality of life. You have to see, life is so much better when you can see where you're going and you're balanced. And as you get older, if you have a hip fracture, I mean, if you're over 70 years old or 75 years old, your chances of dying from a hip fracture are probably 20%.
Yeah, there are lots of possible complications that can happen from
right.
that. Plus, you're in bed rest for a long time.
Right. Well, then you also have to decide, you know, when do you do the other kinds of things? If you have hip and knee problems, for example, or back problems, when are you going to think about trying to fix that? And you can go right in and start fixing it when you have the smallest of problems. But you have to be silly to do that because the risk of MRSA infections, you know, the methicillin-resistant staph infections, is too high. You're looking at 3 to 5%. So there are lots of factors that go into deciding what to do, and they're different for each person.
And the good news is that there are a lot of alternatives for people. There are a lot of things that people can do to improve their health and or whatever their problem seems to be
sure.
without having to do surgery.
Exactly.
But there's a time and a place for surgery. Now,
right.
I know personally, like with my shoulder, I had a horrible rotator cuff,
the worst
that the doctor said he'd ever seen.
It probably was, yeah.
And we tried everything alternative first before resorting to surgery. And then when we did the surgery, I mean, it made a huge difference. I got to a point where I just couldn't stand it anymore. And so that's kind of what happens with people. And that's what was happening with my eyes. That happened with your hip.
Yeah. Well, that's right. So you pay your nickel and take your chances, but you want to be smart about when you take your risk. You don't want to do it too soon, and you don't want to wait till you've lost quality of life. And then when it gets fixed, you want to use it. You know, I don't want to die with a hip that's perfect. I want to use that sucker up, you know, as much
well,
as I
are.
Can.
You
well, I am indeed.
After having your hip replacement, you're playing tennis again. So.
Yeah, playing singles again and feeling good about that.
You know, another cause of hip fractures is osteoporosis.
For sure, and there's a lot of that going around, particularly as we age and we do less. And we're weaker, so we can't stress those bones like we did when we were younger. And unfortunately, the medical profession here should get it in the chops again because the solution they use are these dumbass drugs called bisphosphonates, like Fosamax and Boniva and Didrinel and
Actinel.
Yeah, and 15 other ones. Because what they do is put you at risk for a lot of things that can be very serious.
Well, they're a type of chemotherapy.
Well, they are. And there are things that you can do, like vitamin D and vitamin K and strontium and a little bit of calcium, that make a lot more sense. And, of course, hard exercise and all the lifestyle things that we do. So I think we've come a long way in how we manage things. We've gotten off the wrong track by doing too much in the way of drugs and technologies and surgeries, and not enough of the common sense that we need to have to be able to take care of ourselves, taking responsibility for ourselves rather than leaving it to the medical profession, which is really in bed with the pharmaceutical industry. In fact, even our teaching is that way. So we're at the end of the show, and I want to remind you that we'll be back to talk about what's new in the news and health and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and DrSaputo.com from 1 to 2 Eastern Time and 10 to 11 Pacific Time. Prescriptions for Health will also be available 24-7 on DrSaputo.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you've enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we discussed, go to DrSaputo.com. On Dr. Saputo Radio and check out our fast track videos. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
So take care of yourself, have a great week, and we'll be back next Monday.